Members, we're going to call the redistricting committee hearing to order. And first, we need to take care of some miscellaneous items. And we're going to have Representative Marquardt. Can you approve the minutes for February, or move the minutes for February 8th?
Madam Chair, so move.
Thank you. We moving the minutes of February 8th. Any questions, concerns? If not, the minutes are approved. For February 11th, Representative Poppy.
Actually, that's one that I missed. I'll do the February 18th.
Okay, well, let's do that one first then. So February 18th, Representative Poppy moves the minutes for February 18th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
February 11th, we have got Representative Garofalo.
So moved.
Thank you. And we approve the minutes for February 11th. And I assume it all say aye.
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 All right. February 25th, we've got Representative Poppy.
I will again move those minutes.
Thank you, Representative Poppy. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. So just wanted to take care of that miscellaneous items first. And today, folks, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be hearing from the League of Minnesota Cities as well as the Minnesota Association of County Officers and get some feedback from them as far as any questions that they might have regarding the redistricting process and how it impacts them in after we get our plans passed. So I think we're going to first start off with Ann Higgins. You've got some folks here to testify. If you could come up to the table, please. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Higgins.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Ann Higgins. I work at the League of Minnesota Cities and work in the Intergovernmental Relations Department on election issues. And this afternoon, I have two of the folks of our city member delegation or constituency with us who have some expertise and also have some strong leadership that they've given to some of the issues that will be on the minds of a lot of city officials once the legislative redistricting process is underway. And even currently, we have had some discussions about some of the issues. So this afternoon, the first person that I have here beside me is Deborah Mangan. She's the city clerk in Edina. She's also the co-chair of our elections task force. And we also have another organization of city election officials called the Clerks and Finance Officers Association, and she helped advise them as well. So I'm going to let her do the talking, and I will sit back.
Welcome to the committee. Ms. Mangan, if you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Deborah Mangan. I am the city clerk of Edina. Again, as Ann stated, I am the co-chair of the League of Minnesota Cities and the Municipal Clerks and Finance Officers Association Election Advisory Task Force. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this afternoon. I'm looking forward to working with the committee as we move forward with this redistricting. The timing for redrawing wards and precincts is critical to election administration. This will be my fourth experience with redistricting, twice in a small city that had wards, and then twice in a larger city with precincts but not wards. I believe that it is imperative that we work collaboratively to ensure a smooth and timely transition from what representative and legislative districts exist today and what will happen for the next 10 years as we move forward. This would avoid situations where a small city, for instance, in this case, Chanhassen, finds itself with a precinct that is in an industrial park without any residents living in that park, but each year they must program and print ballots for that precinct. It avoids confusion of citizens when one small location is representative by multiple senators and representatives. We understand that some division is necessary, but we are simply requesting that such divisions of local units of government be kept to a minimum. I would ask your indulgence to let me share with you an experience I had in Edina during the last redistricting. Edina's issue did not derive from too many divisions. Rather, it arose from a division that was somewhat misplaced. In 2002, when the legislature redistricted, the boundary line between Representative District 41A and 41B was run along the school district boundary line between School District 273, Edina, and School District 280, Bloomington. This boundary line is not a physical location, but when you look at old maps, it possibly looks like one. The result is that the school district boundary line bisects a senior cooperative apartment complex that's located at 7200 and 7220 York Avenue in Edina. The result of putting the legislative district line on the school district line meant that I then had an apartment complex that was in two different legislative districts. To comply with statute, I then had to make that apartment complex into two different Edina precincts. Residents were notified of the change after the 2002 redistricting was completed, but during the 2002 election, we had many, many complaints. We had many, many residents that went to the wrong place to vote because their neighbor went there. We had confusion on the part of the major parties when they were trying to do door knocking, because you could be in one apartment and across the hall you were in a different legislative district. It was very confusing. Because of that confusion, Edina hired an attorney in 2004 and who worked with Mr. Peter Watson, who's the counsel for the Senate. Senator Michelle in Senate District 41, Representative Ron Earhart in 41A, and Representative Alice Segrin in 41B supported the legislation, and we moved the line so that we no longer were bisecting that apartment complex. This is one of the things where if we'd had a closer collaborative movement, I think we could have avoided that, and I would just look forward to avoiding those kinds of issues in 2011. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mangan. Members, do we have any questions so far? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And in that situation that you described, you said that when a school bound, you had to change the precinct lines.
Right.
Are you aware what happens when a precinct has two separate school districts in it?
That happens. Thank you, Representative Chair. It happens frequently. In Edina, I actually have six school districts within my corporate boundaries. It's frequently the case where you might have a precinct that has two or even three school districts located within the boundaries. It becomes imperative both on administrative staff and on your election judges to be very diligent in checking the rosters, because you program ballot styles specific to school districts if the school district has an election during a general election cycle.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, to the testifier, so in that situation, you have different ballots in the same precinct, correct?
In the same precinct, yes, sir.
And
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, to the testifier, so in that situation, if you had the one you were describing where there were separate precincts in a House district, are you saying that we should have that same situation for House races where there's multiple ballots in one precinct?
Ms. Mangan.
Representative, Madam Chair, you may not have a precinct boundary. It has to be contiguous with representative boundaries. I can't have two representative districts within one precinct.
I understand. But
Representative Garofalo?
Madam Chair and the testifier, I just want to make sure you're not are you advocating for that? You should have that authority.
Not at all. Just that we work collaboratively.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Ms. Mangan, I have a couple of questions. When you were describing the precinct in Chanhassen, mm-hmm. That had the industrial park and the fact that there were no voters there whatsoever, did the city at one point ask for relief from the legislature in printing those ballots at all? And do you know what the cost was by chance?
Madam Chair, thank you.
Ms. Mayor.
I am not, that was not ever my jurisdiction. Okay. And I believe there's also, there's also county lines that split cities.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the precinct in question is in Hennepin County, where it abuts Carver County. And I am not 100% sure. I think what they might do is there's a technology that is available that is called ballot on demand. And so I think that is what they have decided to do, because there is always the possibility that someone could be living in that area.
Okay. And Ms. Mangan, can you tell me what software you use then when you are drawing the wards and the precincts, or what you used 10 years ago? Let me ask you that first, and then what do you plan on using for this go-around?
I don't have wards, so I probably will not have to actually be in charge with drawing. But 10 years ago, I believe we used something called Paper Tiger. I'm not sure if that's the proper name of the software, but I think everybody was on the same software.
And Ms. Mangan, is that part of the task force, the elections task force, that you guys have formulated to address some of that or discuss that? Or?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We will be working collaboratively with the MACO, which is the county association, so that, and Hennepin County has an excellent elections director that will be guiding the Hennepin County where I currently am employed.
And Ms. Mangan, you just gave the one example of Chanhassen. Are there others that you have a list of those at all? Or?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do not have a list. We could perhaps see if we could put a survey out and get information and get that to the committee.
That would be really helpful. Thank you. Members, any other questions for Ms. Mangan? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. McGuire, please state your name for the record and welcome.
Madam Chair and Committee, I'm Mike McGuire. I'm the proud mayor of the city of Eagan, and I'm here today on behalf of the League of Minnesota Cities as a member of their board of directors. I want to first off thank you for the opportunity to comment. I'm here today to encourage you to adopt among your standards and priorities for redistricting legislative districts a communities of interest standard that prioritizes maintaining the character of our cities and our communities by, to the extent possible, keeping communities whole while redrawing legislative lines. The League of Minnesota Cities has, through every redistricting process, advocated that redistricting be approached in a non-political fashion that recognizes the common interests of citizens within our communities and the value of representing that at the legislature. By way of example, at 67,000 people before the recent census numbers, Eagan's population in and of itself is the rough equivalent of a Senate district and two House districts. And historically, our Senate district has been represented by one state senator and two representatives, all of whom who have been from and familiar with the city of Eagan. However, of our 21 precincts, one precinct of Eagan voters is not part of our Senate district and is instead represented by legislators from South St. Paul and West St. Paul. Meanwhile, our Senate district includes three precincts from the city of Burnsville, and those voters are represented not by legislators from their community who are familiar with their community and its needs, but instead from Eagan. While these communities and Eagan share some interests, we and the citizens and taxpayers of our communities at times share different interests, potentially competing interests here at the Capitol. Citizens of our outlying precinct share much with our community, but are not represented within it, and citizens in Burnsville are represented by three legislators who are not of and inherently are less familiar with the community and its needs. That's why the League of Minnesota Cities has again taken the position that maintaining the character and representation of communities by respecting and prioritizing, to the extent possible, their geographic boundaries is important. Of course, no conversation about redistricting would be complete without some reference to the concept of gerrymandering. And while I certainly put it beyond this committee to be interested in such a process, I would suggest that the inclusion of such a community of interest standard is not only a corrective check and balance against gerrymandering, but moreover, it's an affirmative statement and assurance to citizens that the redistricting process that you are embarking on is about them and their representation. In closing, the League and I recognize that in the census, malapportioned districts are discovered and identified, and that you have the job of appropriately adjusting these districts to their appropriate populations. We don't advocate this community of interest standard as your only priority, and recognize that legislative districts will at times simply have to cut across the geographic boundaries of cities and communities. Our suggestion is simply that you include a community of interest standard among your priorities, and that to the extent possible, you use the redistricting process to make divided communities more whole, or at the very least, not further divide them. Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for your time and your consideration. I can answer any questions that you may have for me. I'm also joined here today by our Director of Administrative Affairs, who can probably answer some of the more detailed questions that Representative Garofalo likes to ask.
Thank you, Mr. McGuire. Members, any questions? Representative Hortman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to ask you the same question I've been asking local electeds at all these meetings. I represent a portion of the city of Coon Rapids and a portion of the city of Brooklyn Park. And as a result, the city of Brooklyn Park and the city of Coon Rapids each have three representatives. So whenever something comes up here and they want us to vote in a certain way, they've got three votes. But in our case, it's very different from Egan, though. I have roughly the same amount of Brooklyn Park as the other members who have parts of Brooklyn Park. And having just one precinct for a member, I can see how that your legislator who has just one precinct might not have quite the same investment in the city's interests as your other legislators. But I just want to ask you to think about, is it more valuable to you to just have representatives who represent only Egan and not other communities, or is having more numeric representation down here of value to you?
Mr. McGuire.
Madam Chair, if I follow the question, I guess I'll try to stay as big picture as I can. What is important to me is that our community and its citizens feel represented by the legislators who we work most closely with, most effectively with, and most often with. And while I have all the respect in the world for Representative Hansen and the job he does representing Egan's Precinct 1, the fact of the matter is that the vast majority of citizens in Egan don't see Representative Hansen as their representative, and there are even some in Precinct 1 who are a little bit confused as to why Representative Hansen represents them and not somebody who is from Egan and knows the community. I would suggest that in that precinct in particular, the city of Egan's interests and legislative positions are not always consistent with the city of West St. Paul or South St. Paul. And the taxpayers in Precinct 1 are represented by someone who has all the reason in the world to be more disposed to the interests of West St. Paul and South St. Paul when those conflicts come in disagreement. Specific to the precincts in Burnsville, because we do have three precincts in Burnsville that are represented by Egan legislators, I'd suggest you'd have to talk to Mayor Couts about that.
Representative Hortman?
No, I think he answered my question. I guess the point would be if we have to give you, if you don't fit neatly within, and you may not anymore because the new standard is about 80,000, and we have to give you more than two House members, it sounds like to me just putting one precinct in somebody else's legislative district may make the Egan interest more orphaned. And it may be better if a more substantial portion of the city is in different representatives' districts so that they're giving as much weight to the city's interests as to the other communities in their legislative district.
Mr. McGuire.
Madam Chair, Representative, I agree. I think what is most important to us is that Egan, and Egan is just one example. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota League of Cities and cities across the state. But specific to the city of Egan, we have traditionally been represented predominantly and almost exclusively by within one Senate district. Dividing the Senate districts in half may increase the number of people who we have voting for Egan's interests up here at the Capitol. I don't know that that would necessarily be representative of their districts entirely, and it would increase, I think, constituent confusion.
Mr. McGuire, you know, Representative Hortman pointed this out. I mean, we're going to be looking at a Senate district of 80,000 people.
Yeah.
So, you're not going to be able to make up in a city that's 66,000. The numbers aren't there to support what you're proposing today. And so, are you saying that we should pick winners and losers then when it comes to who gets the bulk of the representation, or, you know, because that's kind of some of the challenges that we have is the fact that, you know, you can say that one community deserves to have greater representation at the Capitol, and so you might be dividing up that community to save the sake of another community. And I hope that's not what you're suggesting today.
Madam Chair, no, and thank you for the opportunity. First off, I want to be very clear. I understand the challenge that you have in terms of balancing populations and appropriate apportionment. That's why I suggest this standard is not, nor should it be, the only standard in which you consider, or necessarily the primary standard in which you consider.
Mm-hmm.
However, I would suggest that in doing that, that there is some sensitivity to to the ways in which these lines can draw can redraw traditional communities of interest away from that tradition. I would not be supportive, for example, of the idea of redistricting independent Egan's tradition of having been represented predominantly within one district, and dividing the city between two Senate districts, and then adding and making up that population with precincts and other House districts to the east, to the west, to the north, and to the south. And that is the primary concern of the League Board, is parsing up communities where they aren't already parsed up. Now, the fact of the matter is that you're absolutely right that we're not going to make an entire Senate district or two House districts within the population of Egan, or solely within the population of Egan. As opposed to, I think you can adjust the precinct lines to, first off, try to make that district as whole as possible, and then figure out, well, what's the population we need to go get to make this traditional Senate district into a whole one at 80,000. That may be pulling other precincts from other cities in, but at least it wouldn't be dividing a community more than it already is.
Well, Mr. McGuire, as you can imagine, those other communities might have some issues with that and concerns. And,
surely.
You know, I'm sure that you wouldn't want us to make it so that it's an Egan-centered representative when there's another community that says, well, I want my guy to be here. But I don't think that you're saying that today, correct?
I'm not suggesting that at all, no. Okay. I mean, we are very comfortable with the Burnsville precincts, for example, in the Senate district, and certainly maintaining those, but looking at the Senate. I mean, part of that, those precincts in Burnsville get the Senate District 38 to whatever the number is right now. I would imagine they would continue to do that in a redistricting process, reshuffling the chips without a sensitivity to that, I think, is what I'm most concerned about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I should say what the League of Minnesota Cities is most concerned about.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Hortman?
Thank you. I'm just curious. I can't picture in my mind all the suburbs that Egan is surrounded by. But I wonder if there are some suburbs that you have joint athletic activities or you share a school district with. And we don't need to get into that detail now, but I just wonder if you'd carry back to the league for us, or maybe a request from mayors to let us know which communities are more like them. An example would be, in my community, Champlin and Dayton do their athletics together. It would kind of, and they're all in the same school district. It would make sense for them to be in the same legislative district. And so I wonder, in the Egan-Burnsville area, if you guys, you know, not maybe today here in the committee, can let us know which sorts of ties there are in the community that make sense with maybe a Burnsville and less sense with maybe a West St. Paul. Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, indeed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Higgins, Mr. McGuire. Some of your remarks, Mr. McGuire, leads me to question. And something that I heard last week in Rochester was that all their precincts were not equal in number because it didn't matter. And I suspect that most cities that's true, and that you don't need the one person, one vote concept in your precincts. I hope I'm correct on that. And so then, like, we're using the one precinct that was that you mentioned. Is there a possibility then that cities would find out after we've done the map of the House districts and Senate districts, then it's your charge to divide your cities up again? Is there a possibility that you would change the number of precincts, or in cities across the state, that they might change the numbers of precincts, or...
Ms. Higgins, or
Madam Chair, members of the committee, maybe I can. I have one of our other election officials who's here speak to that directly. But just in general, yes, you're right. Very often, because of the way the legislative redistricting is accomplished, it's necessary to try to look at whether or not the current precinct distribution is the one to go forward with, and it often involves more than just the redistricting. There may be shifts that the population has experienced over that period of time. The precincts can be adjusted at other times during that 10-year period, so in many cases that's also what happens as development occurs, or as people or as not as people, as the city rezones an area for development of one kind or another, you become aware of the need to readdress that issue. On the other hand, there are obstacles to that. I know in the city that I live in Eden Prairie, for instance, there's a big highway that goes transverses the city from west east to west, and it makes it very difficult to figure out how to manage the sizes of those polling areas. So it very often creates very large precincts in some areas and smaller ones in other areas. And so it's not always easy for the voters
and
in that situation.
Madam Chair, if I can add on.
Mr. McGuire.
In my community of Eagan, that is probably not as much of a concern because we are not broken into city wards or districts. I'd imagine that in communities that do have wards or districts, there is more of a concern for the balance between the size of precincts because they make up those wards or districts.
Representative Murphy.
But, Madam Chair, then, Ms. Higgins, then the point I guess I'm trying to make is that the precincts are drawn after the House and Senate or after the bill is passed.
Ms. Higgins, do you have Mona Brand up there?
I was looking back to one of our other co-chairs who's in the back room nodding his head yes, and my general understanding is yes.
And so it's not like we should pay a lot of attention, that we should pay a lot of attention then to your present precincts because they're going to change based on what we draw up.
Madam Chair and Member and Representative Murphy, I would say, yes, it is not your job to do that. What I think makes a good deal of sense, and I don't know how it happens, but I think the importance of having the most recent mapping available for local jurisdictions is particularly important. In one of the cases that was illustrated by City Clerk Mangan just a few minutes ago, the map that may have been used in 2001 for the redistricting at that time was not up to date and gave some information that actually turned out to be critical to that particular problem that she had with the senior citizen cooperative apartment, where the legislature did not realize that was not a recognizable physical feature. So we do have obligation at the local level to hand mapping forward to the Secretary of State's office. I'm not sure how often that happens and what we need to do to look at it more carefully. I will certainly look into that, but I did want you to be aware of the particular circumstance that Edina had. It has happened in other places as well.
Representative Murphy.
No, I'm done.
And Ms. Higgins, it would be really helpful if you can give us a heads up on the ones that you've had difficulties with already, at least. So thank you on that. Representative Loon, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just, I think, getting back a little bit to the discussion Mr. McGuire was having, and I think, you know, through the other questions and testimony, we've kind of fleshed out that, you know, in some cases, it may not be possible to have one representative or a community of interest because the numbers just don't work. So, you know, with that in mind, just do you have suggestions for other criteria that the committee should consider in looking at how the boundaries would be drawn in those situations?
Mr. McGuire.
Again, Madam Chair, Representative Loon, I suggest that that the communities of interest standard based on the geographic boundaries of cities be among the priorities that you set. Certainly, if the apportionment requires to divide cities, and I certainly understand that exists right now, that it will continue to exist in the future, that it may well be necessary. If I were making the standards, which of course I'm not, with all due respect, that's your job, what I might look to do is see if I can't balance both this standard put together, for example, if the number is 80,000 on a Senate district, try to target communities of 40,000 that are next to each other and center at least a Senate district around them. Pull precincts or portions of other cities in to that central district as much as you can. You might have then two House districts that are made up of equal representations of roughly 40,000 with an occasional precinct or two. But again, I want to be clear. I don't have all of the standards that I would suggest that you utilize. You know much more about the redistricting process than I do. I and the League of Cities know about cities and communities and know about our concerns with those. This standard that I'm advocating is one that we hope will be among your standards. It has been a standard that has traditionally been held by both the legislature and the courts when looking at issues of redistricting, and we simply want to reassert the importance that we believe there is to maintaining that standard.
Representative Loon.
Thank you.
Members, any other questions? Mr. McGuire, I wanted to ask you this question. So what happens when you have a city that sits on a county line, and so it's divided in half? Are you suggesting that we keep the city whole or that we keep the county whole? What would you suggest?
I'm not aware, quite frankly, of cities that are divided by county lines.
There are.
and that may be. I wouldn't have a position on that because I'm not aware of it.
Okay.
And quite frankly, and I'll suggest to you, the League of Minnesota Cities hasn't taken a position on that specifically that I'm aware of. Is that right?
Thank you, Mr. McGuire. There's about 45 cities that sit on the county line. So, but thank you.
You would know that better than I would, Madam.
There we go. I appreciate you coming forward. And Ms. Higgins, if you can kind of keep us up to date on what's happening on the Elections Task Force, I think that would be really helpful for us to know what's going on there, too.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I will try to do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Oh, Representative Hortman, you had a question.
It's just a question for the chair. I know at the other hearings we've had out in the field to get feedback from local officials, you shared your email address as a route for people to send concerns, and I think we'd definitely love to have more specific information from elected officials in different areas. And I think it'd be helpful if we all had access to the same information. So I was wondering if you were planning to post on the committee's page the correspondence that you're receiving relative to input on communities of interest.
Thank you, Representative Hortman. Of ones that I have the authority to be able to share, that they've submitted it in a formal way to the committee, I can certainly do that. Obviously, I have people, constituents, that contact me about redistricting and other issues, and it's a privacy issue. So certainly on the ones that I've had folks submit, that has been part of the committee record, and you will see that in the committee minutes and in the committee book overall.
So. Committee book. Look forward to hearing more about that.
Well, it's the traditional committee book that every committee carries, no matter. Yes. Yep. Great. Well, thank you for coming. I really appreciate it. And Mr. Mansky with the Minnesota Association of Counties, if you want to step down. County officers, excuse me. Welcome to the committee. How are you doing?
Hello, Madam Chair. I'm doing very well.
If you could state your name for the record.
I am Joe Mansky, and I am the Ramsey County Election Manager. I am here today speaking for all the county auditors. And just perhaps as a point of information, I'm also the staff person for the St. Paul Charter Commission, and will be preparing St. Paul's ward plan. Mm-hmm. And since we are using the same software that you are, Madam Chair, we would be more than happy to share with you our ward boundaries and any other information that you'd like to find out about St. Paul. And since we're talking about this, the business about the cities that are split between more than one county, we have three of them. And as a consequence of that, Ramsey County is in three congressional districts, even though we only have the population, to make up about 78% of one district. We find ourselves in three districts because the five-judge panel 10 years ago was apparently more interested in keeping cities unified than the counties unified. And I suppose from our perspective, we would prefer the other way around, that we not have territory that we are sharing with other counties. Right now, in the present plan of our 17 legislative districts, we have 10 that we are sharing territory. And the issue for us from an administrative standpoint is the more splits that we have, the more ballot configurations we have, and that is a cost driver for us. The more ballot configurations, the more testing we have to do, and so on. So just from purely from the cost standpoint, fewer district overlaps saves us money. And believe me, Madam Chair, since you know I've been there, it's somebody has to get split up. That's just the lay of the land here. But a convenient methodology that you might want to think about is nesting various districts. For example, to the extent that we can have legislative districts completely within a congressional district, it doesn't completely match up, but the more of that you have, I think the better off it is for us from an administrative standpoint. And again, as you heard the other city folks say, the less that you have to divide up a city, the I think the better. And again, somebody has to get split up. That's just the lay of the land here. But let me make a suggestion to you that one of the things that you're going to be looking at is the standards. And I think it's to your interest if you want to go down this road to go off of the strict compliance with the numbers, that if we have an enacted law that have the standards in there, and if one of the standards that you and the governor enact into law is something that says that you are looking to preserve, you know, political subdivisions and so on, that's something that can be defended in court. And again, I will tell you from personal experience that if you leave it to the court to do the plans, that what you will get is this very numbers-driven orientation. And Representative Hortman, maybe when this committee meeting is over, I will tell you exactly why you have the district that you do. I care not to share it for the record here on tape, but I know exactly why the court did what they did. But that's what you get when, and again, I like the judges, because they may be listening to me today. But I like you guys a whole lot better. And my preference, and I think our preference from the county end, would be we would rather have the legislature pass a standards law that, frankly, we could then follow at the county level, because we are doing redistricting as well for county commissioner districts and for those of us who are doing ward boundaries. It would be nice to have something that was in the law that we could then follow. But if without a codified set of standards, then we become prisoner to data, and then we start ending up with things that on the ground don't make a lot of sense, but which makes sense in an affidavit that someone is submitting to a court. And Madam Chair, having been with you in Washington, you know what I'm talking about. You just become a prisoner of this data. So to the extent that it's possible to avoid that, I think that's really useful for both you and for us. I guess the other thing that I would like to talk about is just to let you know what our schedule is. First of all, we all have, or you have, a hard target. And for those of you who have not memorized this, that is Tuesday, February 21st at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And that if there is not a bill on the governor's desk waiting to be signed, I guarantee you that at that hour we will get the court-ordered plans.
You know, thank you, Mr. Manske. I didn't know the hour, so now that's burned into my...
1 o'clock in the afternoon. 10 years ago, or I guess it was 9 years ago, we were all clustered down at the clerk's office over in the judicial building to get our copy of the CDs and so on. And I understand that I wasn't on the floor, but a friend of mine who works for the House told me that things just kind of shut down for a little while. So everybody scurried around and to see what territory they ended up with. And again, I think I can assure all of you, you will be happier with a plan that you are the author of rather than other people. But assuming that that's our day, that's at least the deadline that we're looking at, let me mention a couple of things again from our perspective. The sooner you're done, frankly, the better. But again, I don't think you want to be a prisoner too much of the schedule that you're on right now. You're scheduled to adjourn for the year May 23rd, but I would encourage you, if by chance you don't have an enacted law by that date, that, Madam Chair, I hope that you will keep this committee going during the summer and the fall and to use that time to good use in anticipation of perhaps either doing something shortly after the legislature reconvenes in 2012, or perhaps having the governor call a special session, which I think, as you know, and Mr. Gehring could tell you, has happened in the past, where we have had, when the legislature and the governor have been able to get together in the interim, that the governors have called special sessions for the sole purpose of adapting a redistricting plan. But our preference, the sooner the better, but if you can't be done by May 23rd, we would encourage you to not give up on this process, but to keep working, and we are certainly willing to work with you to the extent that that's of any help to you. But once we get to that point where we have the plans adopted, here's what's going to happen after that. First thing that will happen is we will get new precinct boundaries. All of our cities and towns have the first act here, and they will take your congressional and legislative boundaries, which automatically become precinct boundaries, and then they will reconfigure their territory with new precincts. Here in St. Paul, just so that you know, our plan here is likely to reduce the number of precincts solely from a standpoint of saving money. Another one of our cost drivers is the number of polling places that we have, and the fewer precincts we have, the fewer polling place, the less voting equipment I need, and the fewer ballots I have to print, the whole nine yards. When you are looking at your legislative boundaries and keeping that in mind, we like to use boundaries like section line roads. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, Rice Street is a section line road. So is Maryland. So is Lexington. So is Snelling. And the reason for that is, and I have my council members remind me of this, that they would rather their constituents not have to walk across a busy street in order to get to a polling place or something similar to that. And our section line roads, which are and you recognize the streets I just have just mentioned to you, all tend to be, you know, fairly distinct boundaries between communities, or many of them are in any case. So when you or the staff are looking at configuring district boundaries, you might want to keep that in mind. And again, if you care to incorporate something like that in your standards, that is something that you can defend in court if you start to move away from the perfect population equality that, that again, the courts are likely going to be looking at if they're in charge of this. Once the precinct boundaries have been established, then the cities that are doing this will reestablish their ward boundaries. And, Madam Chair, I understand that there is a bill kind of in development to kind of make some corrections to that issue. But the ward boundaries will come after the precinct boundaries have been established. The next actors then become our counties. They will then do the county commissioner districts. And while they're doing that, the county auditors in the kind of the interim between the adoption of the precinct boundaries and the adoption of the county commissioner district boundaries will start working on the voter file, because remember, we have 3.1 million voter records that all have to be updated geographically so that the voters are now in the right locations for the precincts and the election districts that they now are a part of. We also have over 50,000 precinct finder records, and those are the street records that you use and that the voters use to find out, you know, where they are, what districts they're in. All that data has to be updated, and that will be done in April and May. And what we're aiming toward is May 22nd, which is when all of you, assuming that you're going to sign on for another trip, that's when you will start filing affidavits to get on the ballot for the election in 2012. And then finally, for those voters who are affected by boundary changes or polling place changes, we will all make a non-forwardable mailing to those voters just before the state primary, probably the last 10 days or so of July. So I guess in a nutshell, Madam Chair, that's kind of how the world looks from our perspective, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Manske. Members, any questions? Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Mr. Manske. Can you elaborate more on some of the other things we should look at pertaining to counties?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I think, again, some of the testimony that you heard earlier is probably of some use to you. And, again, you know, from the staff perspective, you have a number of layers of information available to you, and the school districts are a useful thing to look at. Many communities identify with the school district that they're in. And one of the things that we've been doing here in Ramsey County is we've tried over the last 10 years to locate as many of our precinct boundaries on school district boundaries as possible, because that's how we eliminate these split precincts. And I think Representative Garofalo was asking about that earlier. One of the things that we very much want to keep away from is a polling place where there are two different kinds of ballots, because inevitably that leads to a person getting the wrong ballot, and you know, it happens every election. So to the extent that you might at least want to be aware of the existence of the school district boundaries, that is useful. Here in St. Paul, and I think in Minneapolis and perhaps in Duluth, we have what we call community development or district boundaries, our community councils, and that could be one of your layers as well when you are working in Minneapolis or St. Paul, to the extent that our representatives line up with, you know, fairly easily recognizable communities, that's of some use to us as well. And again, as I mentioned before, it's useful not just from an administrative standpoint, but from just from an identity standpoint, to have the legislative districts nested within congressional districts to the extent that is possible. I recall the last time around there was some discussion about having 64 Senate districts, and that would because that would have nested our legislative districts completely within a single congressional district, and I don't think that's going to happen this time around, but I think it's worth at least keeping an eye on that.
Representative Murphy. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There were two things you said that I thought were interesting. One, you said something about enacting a statute with standards in it, and I wondered if that had been done in the past and if they expire, if they only pertain to that redistricting. And the second topic is on the issue of the five-judge panel making the decision that is very numeric, and you seem to be saying maybe communities of interest are something we can look at more than the judges maybe did. I was wondering, besides communities of interest, is there something else that the five-judge panel didn't look at as much when they were focused just on numbers?
Madam Chair, Representative Portman, and again, speaking from personal experience, the courts are going to be numbers-driven because that's what the law is. And I should probably ask you whether you can recite the traditional districting principles. If you can't, you should study up on that for the next meeting. You should know them by heart, because the court does. And so what they're gonna go from top to bottom is they are first gonna look at population equality, and they're going to look at compactness and contiguity, and they're going to look at the protection of individuals who are named in the Voting Rights Act. And that is going to drive this process. 10 years ago, there was a resolution that had standards in it, but the courts are not bound by that. On the other hand, if we have an enacted law, our courts are bound by the law. I was in the Supreme Court this morning, and I'm always impressed when I'm there to hear how much they're not interested in freelancing this. They want to do what you have told them to do. And if you want to recognize the communities of interest, because for the most part they will not, to the extent that your communities of interest are non-empirical, they're not going to consider them because it's not in their ballpark. But if you enact a standards law and you make it clear that you are going to consider communities of interest, and here's how you define them, then they would be bound by that if by chance you were unable to to get the two plans enacted into law. The other really valuable thing about having the standards enacted is you can then specify the order in which you want the standards applied. And again, the first is likely going to be population equality, but if you have a number target for the legislative districts, it does not apply to the congressional districts because we have to come right down to zero or one. But for the legislative districts, you can come up with pretty much any number that you are that you're comfortable with, which then will enable you not to split up as many communities like Eagan and Coon Rapids, and perhaps preserve some of these cultural boundaries that are not empirical but are useful to your constituents. And my other comment on this is, again, 10 years ago, we probably burned a good 9 months of effort going back and forth to court to ultimately get a court order on what these standards were, and which is something that the legislature, I think, could have done early on and could have saved a lot of time and, frankly, a lot of money, because remember that if you fail to do your part, which is to do your legal responsibility to enact these two laws, anyone who is a plaintiff or an intervener is going to get paid by the court, and it's going to come out of your pockets and I guess, and ours.
Thank you. Great. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Mr. Manske, 10 years ago when they had the this resolution process and stuff like that, did they talk about competitiveness and setting up the districts that way? What's sort of the history of that? What were they talking about?
Mr. Manske.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, of course, my boss being Governor Ventura, that was of great interest to him, and he told me that although this was not the main thing that was driving his interest in this, his instructions to me were that he wanted us to propose plans that had as many districts that were politically competitive as possible. And of course, what is politically competitive? A lot of that is in the eyes of the beholder. But in an attempt to make that an empirical activity, the Governor's Commission came up with a set of races and a statistical criterion that we did use that to not only to develop the plans that came out of our commission, but could also be used by the public in determining the fairness, however you look at that, of not only our plans but the plans from the caucuses as well. And I would certainly encourage you to do that, even if you don't use this as one of your explicit standards. I would encourage you to develop some sort of an index that the public could use to compare the plans from your side and from this side, and perhaps the governor will have plans, and there may be plans from the Chamber of Commerce or the Sierra Club or wherever they're coming from. But I think it's really useful to you to have a public measure that's available to anybody that can be used as a fixed standard to evaluate everybody's plans.
Representative Graffa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Manske, I appreciate that, and I appreciate that goal, but I mean, you kind of alluded to in your comments, I mean, how do you determine that? It seems like kind of a nebulous standard, isn't it?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, it was it is nebulous, but you got to make choices in life, and there are some, then the reality is we all know that everybody is going to have their own way of evaluating plans. But I think what is really useful is to have something that is in the public that anybody can use, and not just the although I like them, not just the caucus staff who are going to analyze the plans on your behalf and so on. But for example, some races that we've had recently are probably somewhat indicative of the lay of the land here in Minnesota. The 2008 president's race, the 2008 Senate race, the 2010 governor's race, or some combination of those races, probably tells you something about any plan that is washed against them. And again, it's, you know, you can come up with any kind of a standard that you want to determine what you think is fair, and so can everybody else. But I think the thing that I would encourage you to do is come up with something, make it public, and enable the public to evaluate any plan that is put out there, again, by this one fixed standard.
Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Madam Chair, again, I appreciate that, but so, I mean, it sounds like there's two different, you're making a distinction here. There's one thing to say, here's the map, now assess what the map looks like in sort of this nebulous, unrealistic assessment, because we can look at numbers and interpret them differently, right. But it's an entirely different thing to say, when you draw the districts, I want you to use that standard to draw the district that way. And do you, I mean, are you, you're not, I mean, you're still advocating that we should use cities and of interest and, you know, the terms you used, I mean, you're still saying that's what we should do, that we should not look at this nebulous standard, correct?
Mr. Manson.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I'm not sure I should actually make this next comment.
Have at it. Let's go.
Because I could be selling this for about $500 an hour, but let me just tell you this. The first legislative plan I did, which some of you may remember, that ended up pairing up 40% of the membership of the entire legislature, I did not look at that data. All I was looking at was what the court likely did, and that is to come up with districts that were essentially of equal population and were, you know, relatively compact. And if you do that, that's kind of what you end up with. Later on in the process, I had our index as a layer, and as I was locating boundaries, I was putting them on this layer of our index of four races. And what we used 10 years ago were the four minor constitutional offices from 1998. And I'll tell you why we were interested in that. Seven of the eight candidates were not incumbents. I think the only incumbent running was Judy Dutcher. And our thought was that in low-profile races where few, if any, incumbents are running, what else do you have to go by but the party label? So I was actively using that as we got farther and farther into this process. And using that, I was able to come up with a map. In fact, the last map I gave Representative Abrams and Representative Ostoff, for those of you who remember them, was a district where we had about 57 competitive districts by our index. And I will tell you that the members of the House would have been better served by enacting that plan into law than the one that we ultimately got from the courts.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Manske, and again, I guess when you're saying this index and this competitiveness, I want to describe a precinct in my district. I've been on the ballot four times now, 04, 06, 08, and 010. Okay? First time I ran in this precinct, I got 54. Mm-hmm. Right? And then 4 years later, I dropped down to 46. Right? So that's... Okay. Now, at the same time, from 06 to 010, I went from 46 to 62. So, now, that defies any sort of measurement of what a political index is. And I guess I would just say I think that we are much better off drawing our lines based off of communities of interest, off of county and city lines, as opposed to this... subjective criteria of what a political index is in an area, because candidly those political indexes they sway in the wind and they change dramatically based off of many criteria. Mm-hmm. The people who live there are a very small part of it. They are subject to many other changes, which we cannot control nor do we want to control.
Right.
Mr. Manske.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I could not agree with you more, but remember that at the point where I was using the index layer, what we were trying to do was to get a law enacted. And the reason I am telling you this is that you become somewhat less chaste in this process as you get closer to the deadline. And what you may find that in order to, you know, given the configuration that we have here today, that in order to get a law enacted that has to be supported by both sides, that it's useful to you to know that information, however you derive it, and to let the public know the basis for the plans that you are that you're putting forward. It's not, you know, it's not the way that maybe things should work, but it's sometimes things work out that way.
Representative Groffel.
Madam Chair, I'm being summoned to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Mr. Manske, I have a couple questions for you that I wanted to ask. Can you tell me, so you had mentioned that your county uses Maptitude. Do all the counties use Maptitude?
Madam Chair, I don't think so. I think we are probably in a small minority of counties that do.
Mr. Manske, is it possible for you to find out what all the different counties use for software? I think that would be kind of helpful.
Madam Chair, I will do that.
Great. And Mr. Manske, you had also mentioned that by keeping the counties together, it saves you money as far as balloting and whatever. I would assume the reverse would be then for the case of the cities and schools. If we were to divide them up, it's kind of, you can't win either way. Is that correct? I mean, yeah. You're going to have school board elections if they're split. And
yeah, Madam Chair, just the reality is someone's going to get split up. I mean, someone's going to be unhappy at the end of this process. But again, I think if you can just keep as a general principle, the fewer splits you have, the better off we are from a financial standpoint. And I suspect that that people are happier if whatever community, however they're defined, is kept whole. But again, I understand what you have in front of you, and again, someone's going to be unhappy at the end of the day. That's just the lay of the land.
Thank you, Mr. Manske. And then I just had one last question. When we've been on the road, Mr. Gehring has given us a presentation on what this all means for the different local units of government. And one of them was talking about the 10% standard that we have right now for counties, that you have a deviation of 10%. Can you talk to me a little bit about that? And given the technology in particular that your county is able to use, do you think that 10% standard is up to date given the technology that's available to us in drawing maps?
You know, Madam Chair, in the metropolitan area, 10% is probably not necessary, but once you get into greater Minnesota, it becomes more difficult to reach population equality and with the geography that you have available, because since the county boards come last in this process, they are stuck with the precinct boundaries that have been created for them. And of course, in greater Minnesota, most townships are a single precinct, as are most small cities, and it becomes much more difficult for them to reach population equality, and that's has been the rationale in the past for having the bigger margin for county commissioner districts than is the case, for example, for the ward boundaries, where the target there is 5%, because it's easier to split up the urban territory than it is the rural territory.
And Mr. Manske, are the counties working in conjunction with the cities and the townships as far as, do you work with them in drawing the precinct lines to try and help minimize that at all? Or?
Madam Chair, to the extent, at least here in Ramsey County, to the extent that we can, we do try to advise our cities on where to locate precinct boundaries, and not just for the convenience of the voters, but also, frankly, to help deal with some of our cost issues. Yeah, we are certainly doing that actively. I suspect many other counties are doing as well.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Members, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Manske, I want to go back to the deviation point that the Chair was raising, and I wasn't sure if I was hearing you correctly. I don't want to infer what you were saying. Were you advocating for deviation bigger than kind of the standard 2% to take into consideration communities of interest? Or I don't want to put words in your mouth, so could you be a little expound on that just a little more?
Yeah. Mr. Manth.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Loon, that it will be easier for you to preserve communities of interest if you have a bigger standard. And if you don't have a codified standard, you'll get the court-driven standard. And I believe their, if I remember this properly, I believe their deviation was closer to 0.5%. And again, that's, you have to understand what is motivating them, and they are motivating by those traditional districting principles, the first of which is population equality. If you leave it to them, that's the plan you're going to get. By having a codified standard, you can justify a larger margin if you are doing it to, among other things, not divide up cities and counties. That the courts have ruled that is okay, and so that if that's one of your interests, one way to accomplish that, again, is to have a codified standard that has a bigger number in it. I will tell you that in the resolution that was the 2% was the target that we were all using. But again, the court had no obligation to go along with that, and given their own, you know, their own was driving them, they went to a much smaller number. And again, that's why you see some of the cities divided up the way they were, because they were solely being driven by the population number and a few other criteria.
Representative Loon.
Well, thank you. And as I'm sure you know, and obviously you have been through this whole process before, as we look at sort of the demographics and what's happening, you know, we've got some real challenges with sort of how we square that, a plan that doesn't, you know, have a deviation that is questionable. But yet, you know, some real rural counties with very sparse population, and then you've got some hub city areas with very small communities outside of that. How we kind of marry those two challenges and come up with a plan. So any other suggestions for us or criteria that you would look at if, you know, in trying to keep communities of interest or counties or cities sort of together as much as possible, but with those realities of our demographics.
Mr. Manske.
Madam Chair, Representative Loon, I think the best thing to do, and I'm glad to see that you are doing this, the best thing to do is to go on the road and let people talk to you about the communities that are of importance to them. I think the more that you know about that, the better you are. And to the extent that you can make those criteria somewhat empirical, that helps you if you have to defend your plan in court.
Madam
Representative
Loon.
Well, Mr. Manske, with the tools and the mapping tools and that are available today, I mean, do you see it as a huge challenge to, again, marry kind of those standards of trying to have as little deviation as possible so that your plan appears to be fair and equitable, but looking at those community interests, I mean, do you think it's possible to get down to a less than 2% and be able to meet some of those other important criteria?
Mr. Manske.
Madam Chair, Representative Loon, it is, but again, I think the point that I want to make to you that is that the two can be somewhat incompatible, that if you become overly reliant on population equality, you will end up with more divided communities. The more that you focus on keeping communities whole, however you define them, I think just the lay of the land, the farther away you are going to get from strict population equality. But again, if you have a law where you define what your communities of interest are, whether they are cities, counties, some of these urban neighborhoods, maybe some, you know, some rural development districts, school districts. If you have something that you can quantify, it's also something that if necessary, we can defend in court.
Representative Loon.
Thank you.
Any other questions, members? Representative Hortman?
My questions are for Mr. Mansky. They're just a process question, so okay. Whenever.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Mansky.
Sure thing.
Representative Hortman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm hoping that we are going to be the first group in 40 years to draft a plan that gets signed by the governor and governs the next election. And so I'm just wondering if you can lay out kind of a roadmap for us of what you see us doing in March. I think the road trips were extremely valuable. It's very hard for us to understand communities of interest until we go and we ask people to come and tell us about their communities of interest. And so I was wondering if you had kind of a schedule in mind of what other places you think we might be going, if we're going to be doing urban meetings in the evening or suburban meetings in the evenings. I know I'm not the only member on the committee who has children with children's activities. And so those having those dates sooner rather than later is easier. And then just to kind of get an idea of the geographic distribution of where we'll be visiting and then what kind of information we'll be taking in.
Thank you, Representative Hortman. As we had an email correspondence on this issue, and as you know, it's fluid. A lot of it is dependent upon members' availability, as we have the budget before us as the main concern that we have in the legislature. But we're going to be hearing from testimony from different groups. I think we'll probably next week hear from the townships folks to hear what concerns that they might have. And just keep plugging away as we get closer to when the numbers come. So I think we're all eagerly waiting for those numbers. And as soon as I can give you some direction of where else we might go or what else we might be hearing, you'll receive notice. And I've been in communication with Representative Murphy about this all along the way, and so make sure you keep in touch with her as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you know at this point in time whether you hope to get out on any of the Fridays in March to the further away places?
Representative Hortman, we're looking at these different opportunities and we're just kind of planning it by ear right now.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Members, anything else? Great. We are adjourned.